Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 114, All Birds Must Fly. Monday, March 28th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and so forth, and off the shelf. Welcome and thank you to some very special folks who have recently given star ratings and reviews on iTunes. One such listener is DAMama94, who has requested more crochet content in the podcast. That's certainly something for me to think about in future projects. Maybe work some more crochet back into the episodes. And there's also been a star rating and review from Joey Gibson. Joey is the co-host of the Unraveling podcast, and he recently gave a short 5-minute speech about knitting to an audience of, I think it was a pure audience of muggles. And from what he says, it was very well received. So thank you so much, Joey, and congratulations on your talk. I would also like to send a very special shout out thank you to my swap partner, Lorna. Lorna and I were participants in a home port swap hosted by Sarah of the Fiber Trek podcast. And this swap was meant to treat your partner to some of the local fare and local traditions and local yarn and fiber. And I was sent just an outstanding package, so thoughtful, with so many interesting things from around her area in the Pacific Northwest and also from other parts of the world as well. Thank you so much, Lorna. The back porch. Since the last podcast episode, I have completed Hedi Yi, a beautiful shawl designed by Isolde Teague. I saw this pattern on Ravelry and just really couldn't stop thinking about it and thinking about how the design would be such a beautiful showcase for wonderful natural fibers. Hedi Yi starts with a cabled border. This is a construction I had never tried before, so I wanted to be able to work on some new skills as well as yarn that I had in my stash and also some interesting color combination. The border of the shawl I knit with a 100% Romney yarn from a local to me farm, Pondwood Farm, and this yarn was spun at the Gertie Run Woolen Mill, and I know that's used by a number of small local farmers. This Romney yarn was a beautiful deep brown color. It was a 2-ply DK weight, rather tightly spun, and I thought it would be perfect to show off the cabling. The pattern called for 31 repeats of a cable, and I took that up to 37 repeats to expand the width of the shawl a little bit. and because I had quite a bit of yarn and I wanted to use as much of it as possible. So I completed the cabled border and then picked up with just one garter row of a contrasting color, which is kind of a tawny rust sort of color that I had left over from a previous project. And then the center of the shawl I knit with some beautiful Bahram U Dovecoat DK in this extraordinary luscious rhubarb color, like a bright magenta. This yarn was just incredible to knit with. The center of the shawl goes very quickly after you've done that border, and I really enjoyed working with this type of construction of a shawl very much. I knit this project on US size 7 needles. The completed shawl measures 60 inches wide by 21 inches deep. It benefited quite a bit from blocking. I didn't need to use pins or anything. The shawl is pretty substantial, and I just pressed it into shape after it had been soaking for about a half an hour, and it just held its own shape as it dried. It's a great addition to my wardrobe because it incorporates many of the deep, earthy colors that I tend to wear, and it has been chilly enough a few evenings since I completed it that I've actually been able to wear the shawl this spring. So I think this is a fantastic addition to my wardrobe. It is a shawl that makes quite an impressive appearance. I think, as Isolde Teague intended, this would be a fantastic shawl to knit for a gift. This shawl, Hedi Yi by Isolde Teague, as well as the Paper Cranes shawl by Lori Versace that I will be knitting later this spring, are both part of an informal knit along running from the beginning of March to the end of June. And you are welcome to knit either one of these shawls. There is a prize thread open with a beautiful shawl pin as a prize currently. And likely I will be adding some additional prizes to that drawing as well. So if you have won one of these patterns, or if you have developed an interest and have purchased one of these patterns, please join in and snap a photo of your finished project or project in progress and post to the thread. On the front porch is, of course, the Paper Cranes shawl designed by Lori Versace. This shawl is more in the style of a stole. It's asymmetrical and quite simple in its design, but stunning. I have thought quite a bit about the yarn I'd like to use for this project, and I still have not made a decision. So I won't be beginning that until May. In the meantime, I have decided that I'd like to knit Bonnie. This is a beautiful knitted tank designed by Tin Can Knits, and which was generously given to me as a gift. The pattern was given to me as a gift by my friend Fernanda. I've been thinking about knitting this for a long time. It's been at the top of my queue. And this past week, I did start the project with a lace weight yarn that turned out to be not substantial enough for the project. So I've ordered some Swan's Island yarn in indigo color. In reading reviews about the Swan's Island yarn, folks said very nice things about the fiber itself, and certainly the practices that are used to create and dye this yarn are very well respected, so it's something I would like to try. But there are several different colors that use indigo dyes in the dye mix, and folks have pretty uniformly complained that crocking occurs, or this phenomenon where not all of the dye is absorbed by the yarn, and as you're working with it, the dye can come off on your hands, on garments you're wearing, and, you know, that can be very distressing. So it seems to me that the thing to do would be to give this yarn multiple rinses until the water is clear or nearly clear and all of the excess dye has been removed. I purchased 2 skeins of Swan's Island yarn in indigo in a destash. I'm eager to receive it, to begin working with it, swatching with it, and see if it is best suited for the paper cranes shawl or for the Bonnie knitted tank. In the meantime, having completed the Hedi shawl and not having a lot else going on my needles, I decided to continue working on socks. With an afternoon at my disposal, I decided to finally sit down with the Fish Lips Kiss Heel pattern, read it completely through, make a template of my foot, and give this heel turn a try. And so I finally feel like I know what so many other knitters and podcasters have been talking about with the Fish Lips Kiss Heel. I think this is an easy to do heel and one that is going to fit my foot quite well. I also feel that having completed the template, I have a very clear idea of where to do the heel turn, which had been really problematic for me. With my anxiety about where to turn the heel or how the sock is going to fit somewhat dispelled, I have to say that working on knitting the socks is a lot more fun. I'm using some really searingly bright hot pink Frolicking Feet yarn. It has stripes of the hot pink and then stripes of some much more muted chocolate browns, caramel browns, and grays. So it makes knitting the sock go quite well, and I am doing ribbing on the top of the foot and the cuff of the sock. Also using US size 0 Carbons needles is keeping my knitting very even, very dense. This sock feels more like the sock that I imagined knitting for myself. So this is the first sock of a pair, and I believe that after this pair is complete, I will be ready to knit the Agatha socks by Claire of New Hampshire Knits. This is a pattern that's been in my queue. It was given to me by Claire. It's a sock that I really want to knit, but I wanted to build up my skills a little bit before I took on the sock. I also have some very special yarn that I've been saving for the project. So hopefully later this spring, I will begin to start working on those Agatha socks. Ever expanding skill set. This month, the month of March, I've had such a great time using lemons in my cooking, and it seems like something that has energized and interested a lot of Yarns at Yanhu listeners as well, because there's been a great deal of cooking along and using hashtag Power Pantry to mark our recipes and photos this month. Since I recorded last, I have made a lemon, asparagus, and walnut pesto that I served over pasta with some roasted asparagus and some really nice local goat cheese. That was a delicious weeknight meal and made really good leftovers as well. I made some lemon pound cake, and then for Easter dinner, my contribution was just a beautiful dessert. This came from a tip from Salmon Knits to use a Martha Stewart recipe for a homemade lemon curd. I don't typically use Martha Stewart recipes because I find the website that she has very difficult to navigate. In this case, though, Jenny took me straight to the page that I needed for this really incredible, flavorful lemon curd. It made enough to fill the cake and some extra for toast besides. And I also watched Martha Stewart's video about how to make 7-minute frosting. This is something my mother is a complete whiz at doing, and I have many unsuccessful attempts with 7-minute frosting. I have to say, though, that Martha Stewart's techniques really did the trick, and I was able to complete a successful frosting. And I sort of went off on my own a little bit on a butter recipe cake with some lemon juice added and also some coconut, because I think for spring, that lemon-coconut combination is really special. I'll include a photograph of my Easter cake on my website for this episode. And in April, for hashtag Power Pantry, I will be cooking with leafy greens. I think this is perfect for spring. If you're in the part of the world that's not experiencing spring, frozen leafy greens are also an option. And you can always just select your own ingredient for hashtag Power Pantry and make your own agenda for an ingredient or a type of dish that you would like to try and expand your culinary skill set. I've realized that over the course of this year, recording this ever-expanding skill set segment, I've referred to the Food 52 website quite frequently. Although I do sometimes reference other websites, and I do have a small but very dependable collection of cookbooks at home, most of the time when I'm thinking about what I'm going to be making, I'm thinking about creating a shopping list, and I'm thinking about going to the grocery store on the way home from work. And so what happens is that over my lunch break or just before I leave work, I look at something online to check ingredients for a recipe, and then I end up using that recipe, of course, when I get home and I'm cooking. And the Food 52 website is just extensive, it's reliable, it just is very usable, and so I tend to turn to it again and again. This week, I learned that there is a new app. It's an iOS-only app, but it's called Not Recipes, and it really feeds into the way I tend to cook, which is not sticking to a recipe faithfully, for the most part, but using a recipe or even a photograph as an idea for some cooking of my own. I've added the Not Recipes app to my iPhone, and I've been playing around with it a little bit, but I just thought I would mention it to Yarns at Yin Who listeners in case any of you are interested, and certainly I would love your tips and your feedback if you are already using this app and you're having success with it. And so forth. I've been thinking about a garment to make that would be a really versatile dress for the late spring and summer months, something I could wear again and again. And really, the little black dress is a wardrobe standby. So I've decided to try the Kiyomi dress. This is a pattern from Lotta Janstadter's Everyday Style. It's a very simple garment with some self-made bias binding around the arms and around the neckline. It's meant to be made in a very thin, very drapey fabric so that it's just long and flowing and very feminine. In the book, she shows this Kiyomi dress as a top, as a mid-length dress, and also as a very long dress. I ordered some 50% silk, 50% cotton fabric, and when it arrived, I began to grow alarmed at the prospect of working with this fabric, which is very thin and slippery. And also, I started thinking about how to prepare the fabric before starting to work with it. I posted a question on some of the sewing boards on Ravelry and was given some very helpful and generous feedback, as well as some websites to look for tips. I think I will be hand washing this cotton silk fabric because I think it's likely I would hand wash the dress as well. And I'm hoping that by washing, I will remove a little bit of the shine to the fabric. This has a very definite right and wrong side. And I think I will be using the wrong side as the public-facing side because it has much more of a matte finish. When I finally do get up the nerve to cut into that fabric, certainly I will be letting you listeners know about it. With my plan for a mostly handmade wardrobe, one of the concerns I continually have is how to make an ethical purchase when I need an item that I'm not capable of making myself. And of particular concern has been athletic footwear. I am a passionate walker. During pleasant months of the year, I usually average 3.5 miles per day on a walk. And every year I need a new pair of athletic shoes. And I haven't felt fantastic about the purchases that I've made in the past. Early in March, I was sent an article from Wired Magazine about a company called Allbirds that was making wool runners, a wool running shoe with a considerably smaller carbon footprint than most athletic shoes, and a company started by two people with a lot of passion for the environment, but also a concern for making a really, you know, practical, useful shoe. So I kind of filed that information away. And then a little bit more recently, Clara Parks was writing about this same athletic shoe in her newsletter. So it being spring and being time for me to make athletic shoe purchase, I decided that I would give these Allbirds a try. So I ordered a pair, women's size 9, in the teal color. It's a dark teal color with stitched grommets. There's very little hardware on this shoe. It's a very soft, lightweight shoe. And so the stitched grommets on my pair are a bright turquoise color and they have a black sole. I've worn this shoe twice so far for about a 3.5 mile walk, once without socks and once with a very thin sock inside the shoe. I have to say these shoes are much more comfortable without socks. It seems like a very strange way to be wearing an athletic shoe, but the whole idea is that the wool functions both as the sock and as the sneaker. These shoes are comfortable for walking, and for the distance that I walk, I think they will be quite useful. They are billed as wool runners, and I do not see the potential for these Allbirds as a running shoe. I've been a runner in the past. I don't do any running at this time, but I just don't think that this shoe has enough structure or support to be a good running sneaker. The shoes are incredibly lightweight, and it seems to me like they will also wash very easily just in some warm, soapy water. They have removable insoles, and I think that these insoles can also be replaced. I feel like the top front of this shoe is rather thin. And one thing I was saying to some of my podcaster friends in chatting about this shoe is that I think toenail maintenance will be essential for wearing this shoe, especially if I'm wearing it without any socks inside. I feel good about making this purchase. Tim Brown and Joey Zwillinger, who are the owners of the company and did a great deal of Kickstarter fundraising, seem to have put a lot of thought and effort into the quality and integrity of this footwear. I think they also have plans for additional iterations of this footwear line going forward. So I'm happy to put my money into a company that is working to make good decisions and a good product with a relatively low carbon footprint. I thought that the service was also very simple. The ordering process online, very simple. The cost, $95, included free shipping. And the sneakers came to me very quickly after ordering. So I was very pleased with all of those aspects. I will be interested to see how these shoes wear over time and also to additional products that come out with this line. Once again, the name of this company is Allbirds, and the product is Wool Runners. I will be putting a photograph as well as a link in the show notes for this episode. Off the shelf. Last episode, I announced an Eat Your Words read-along that I'll be hosting throughout the summer months, and there has been some very enthusiastic posting of title ideas as well as films related to food. So I hope you'll check out the growing list of potential titles for the read-along and contribute some ideas of your own. This read-along will begin on June 1st and will continue through September 1st. You are invited to select a food-related title, not a cookbook, but something in the genre of culinary memoir or maybe food journalism. And we also have a growing list of culinary-focused fiction going on the Ravelry thread. And in the meantime, some folks are posting films that are food-related as well. So if this is a topic that interests you, there's a wealth of information available on the thread. And I'm really looking forward to relaxing into some food-related reading for the summer months. I also thought that I would share a poem that I read over this past week. We had a very exciting event in the district where I teach. Our first outdoor classroom had a ribbon cutting and grand opening. This is a project that began when one of our teachers, who's a former student at the school where I work, just lamented to some colleagues that he really wanted to take his students outside. Of course, they would always be asking, as soon as the weather is nice, students ask their teachers, can we have class outside? But we didn't really have any kind of formal place to hold a class or hold, productive classroom discussion. So it's one thing to take a class outside if you are looking at something on the school property, or if you're conducting an experiment or setting off a rocket or something like that. But if your purpose is to just take classroom activities and try them outside, It's very difficult for a period of 80 minutes or so for students to be sitting on the ground, not distracted. So we were looking for some type of a classroom setting that we could have outdoors. And through the very hard work and dedication of a few of our teachers, we received funding for not one, but two classrooms on the school campus. Students in a CAD class were given a project to design an outdoor classroom for one of two spaces. Folks were on a committee to review some of the best student proposals and then think about how to translate that into an actual classroom. And then students were involved in building the classroom that was finished this month. And then there's another one in the works for a later time in the year. So at the ribbon cutting, I was asked to read a poem. I thought about a number of possible poems, but the one I decided on is titled To Be of Use. It's by Marge Piercy, and it's one of my favorites, so I thought I would share it with you today. The people I love the best jump into work head first, without dallying in the shallows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black, sleek heads of seals bouncing half submerged. I love people who harness themselves, an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the mud and the muck to move things forward, who do what has to be done again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but move in a common rhythm when the food must come in or the fire be put out. The work of this world is common as mud. Botched, it smears the hands, crumbles to dust. But the thing worth doing, well done, has a shape that satisfies, clean and evident. Greek amphoras for wine or oil, Hopi vases that held corn, are put in museums, but you know they were meant to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry, and a person for work that is real.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves are down like a lady waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurtz sings, but I don't wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or liking the show's Facebook page, or joining the Yarns at Yunhu group on Ravelry. The music for the episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. Country mile, it's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.